Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Phi Beta Crapper division here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, it's actually time to revisit the famous Bulwer-Lytton contest. His name was Edward George Earl Bulwer-Lytton. He opened his novel, Paul Clifford, in 1830 with the immortal words, "It was a dark and stormy night."
Yes, it was.
It also says here he was responsible for the line, "The pen is mightier than the sword."
I don't think so. I always thought that was William Shakespeare.
Well, you thought wrong then.
Evidently.
Now, here we have people write in and try to write things which are as outrageous as what Edward George Earl Bulwer-Lytton. And there are various categories, and I'm going to read to you my personal favorites. As a scientist, Throckmorton knew that if he were ever to break wind in the echo chamber, he would never hear the end of it. I mean, is that not a winner right there?
That is.
I mean, how can it get any better than that?
It didn't flow as well as it could, but not bad. It did convey the message.
Here's another. I mean, these are brilliant lines. Stanislaus Smedley, a man always on the cutting edge of narcissism, was about to give his body and soul to a back alley sex change surgeon to become the woman he loved. And how about this? I still like the Throckmorton one. The sun oozed over the horizon, shoved aside darkness, crept along the green sward, and with sickly fingers pushed through the castle window, revealing the pillaged princess, hand at throat, crown asunder, gaping in frenzied horror at the sated, sodden amphibian lying beside her, disbelieving the magnitude of the frog's deception and screaming madly, "You lied!" I mean, that's pretty good.
No, that's very good.
But is it as good as, with a curvaceous figure that Venus would have envied, a tanned, unblemished oval face framed with lustrous, thick brown hair, deep azure blue eyes fringed with long black lashes, perfect teeth that vied for competition, and a small straight nose, Mary Lee had a beauty that defied description. Don't you wish you had written stuff like this? I mean,
read the Throckmorton one again.
As a scientist, Throckmorton knew that if he were ever to break wind in the echo chamber, he would never hear the end of it.
Well, look, if you think those lines are bad, wait till you hear some of our upcoming answers. If you have a problem with your car or anything else and would like to hear some of our fiction, you can give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Linda from Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Hi, Linda from Apple Valley.
The snow is gone.
Jeez. Wow.
So the ice fishing season is officially over, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Wow.
So what's going on, Linda?
I've got a big problem. A big one.
Yeah?
I have a 21-year-old daughter who is home from college, and she may be riding in the death trap at this very moment.
Uh-oh.
And although I get mad at her sometimes, I don't want anything bad to happen to her.
Certainly not.
Still, we got to get to that stage in life where she starts doing nice things for me, which I figure is about 30 years from now.
Wait a minute. Let me just tell you.
Yes.
She's 21, huh? See, my son is 19, and he actually has started doing nice things for his parents at 19.
Is there something wrong with mine? Is it because she's a girl?
Well, I'm wondering. I don't know. Is there a gender difference here?
I don't know. We should commission a study on this.
We should. I mean, there must have been one already. But I just wanted to let you know. So your daughter, if she hasn't started already, could be behind the times, in which case we'd have to institute some kind of punishment.
Maybe I shouldn't fix this car she's in after all.
Maybe. We'll let you know.
Well, we had a wonderful Honda Accord 1988 car that was never, ever going to die until it got taken to one of those drive-in, get your oil changed, get your fluids topped, and drive-out places. And apparently the 18-year-old kid who only worked there for 2 weeks before he got fired must have put in some strange fluid into the brake system because 3 weeks later, the brake system is gone, and we took it into a different drive-in real quick and get your muffler changed kind of a place. And they said, there's a strange fluid in here, and they showed us it, and it's in a cup in the garage because my husband never throws anything away.
Huh.
And they said the entire brake system needed to be replaced, $1,400.
I believe it.
Well, we put the car in the garage for 6 months until the daughter came home from college a couple weeks ago, and the math classes must have paid off because she said there's three cars, there's three people,
and they were
I
all
should
set.
Get one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we did. We took it to the mechanic on the corner, like the real mechanic, and he said, you don't need to replace every single thing in this car. You just need to flush out the hoses and replace the master cylinder, and it'll be $450. So we did that. And now people are telling us, no, at any minute, you could have no brakes, your kid is in jeopardy, you really have to replace every single part of the brake system.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the 18-year-old kid who
was
made the
acting
mistake,
as an agent.
Exactly, and that operation, that company should pay for the $1,400 bill.
Well, I called them, and they said, no way would we do anything like that. And I said, let me speak to the guy who worked on our car. And they said,
we fired
him after 2 weeks, but not because he put stuff in the wrong hole in a car.
Oh, no. Well, I think if you went to court, you'd win hands down.
Really?
Absolutely.
Even with no proof.
Absolutely. We've lost easier cases than that. So I think if you did take them to court, or even the threat of going to court would make them pay up.
Really? So you think we should get tough, huh?
I think you should get tough, but I think you should also replace everything. I mean,
really?
Well, I think so, just to be on the safe side. On the other hand...
Well, everything doesn't mean... I mean, you don't have to replace the rotors.
No,
well,
the
let me tell you what they said everything should be.
Yeah,
the calipers, the hoses, the master cylinder, the wheel cylinders, the... bleed the hydraulic systems and resurface
that's
the rotors.
Everything.
Well, the rotors
yes.
don't need to be resurfaced unless it's, that's right. unrelated to the problem.
The rotors are unrelated, but all the other stuff definitely should be done.
Oh, boy.
All the hoses, the calipers have to be replaced, and this guy who just replaced the master cylinder, that ain't enough.
Uh-huh. Well, it may be. He may have ascertained that the contamination didn't reach down to that level.
Okay.
I would just change the wheel cylinders, actually, because they're real
cheap.
The calipers I would certainly take apart. And if they look all right, then you can have it put back together, or you can
just buy a new one
or
for
just
that
buy
one.
Yeah, you know. But I think to be on the safe side, I would replace everything. But I would the first step I would take is to go back to these guys and tell them, after much consideration, you're going to sue their pants off, and you would like them to pay.
I can get mean if I have to.
Good luck.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Say
I
it,
love
Linda.
I love your show.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
I like the business. Well, he's not here anymore. We fired his little sorry butt.
But not
but
for
he
that.
Was, but he was great. He was a great employee. We loved him for those 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, God. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Pete from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Hey, Pete. What's going on, man?
Well, I got a 93 Ford Escort wagon, and it has no rear suspension. Well, it does, but it's done. It's killed.
Uh-huh.
And I was told I need new springs and new shocks, but I'm poor and I can't afford them. Do I really need to replace these?
Well, they're good to have. You've been carrying heavy stuff in this poor little Escort?
Oh, man. I was hoping you wouldn't ask. I have I'm a hang glider pilot. So I have a huge rack on top of my car. It's about 20 feet long, and it weighs about 70 pounds. And I'd say four times a month I have to put a hang glider in that, so that's about 130 pounds on the car. My dad says I'm the one that killed the suspension because of this rack. But, I mean, that doesn't even weigh what a human weighs.
I've had mothers-in-law who weigh much more than that.
Exactly.
Oh, well, Do you?
And the
hang glider will give you some lift, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of folded up, but I guess I could make it do that.
Yeah. Well, the only reason you need to replace the springs is if they're broken.
Oh, they're broke. I can hear them. They go clunk clunk every time.
Oh, they are broke.
You need
springs.
You need springs and struts.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and you need to do it for a lot of different reasons, but the most important one is that the lack of struts. Either front or rear, is going to cause you to have poor tire-to-road contact.
Oh.
In other words, have you seen cars driving down the road where the tires look like they're bouncing like a basketball on the road?
Mm-hmm.
And those cars don't have struts anymore or shocks. They're all worn out.
And when it bounces up and down like that, obviously if you try to stop, part of the time the wheel's not hardly touching the ground. So you don't have good stopping.
Or steering. So your car becomes dangerous not only for you, but for everyone else who's on the road at the same time.
So it's a safety thing.
It's definitely a safety thing. There's no question about it.
Not to mention the fact that every time the tire bounces up and down on the road like that, you're wearing the tires out.
Oh.
So do it, man.
Did I kill the car?
I don't think so.
Is it okay if I keep the rack on the car?
Yeah, that didn't wreck the space.
No, good.
They just wore out.
All right.
Yeah, nothing else has happened to this car in 10 years?
No, not really.
Oh, the other shoe's going to fall. See you, Pete.
Hey. Thank you very much. Bye.
Good luck.
Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kristen from Acton, Massachusetts.
Kristen. K-R-I?
K-R-I.
Woo!
Hi, Kristen.
From where again?
Acton.
Acton, Massachusetts.
That's like near Concord?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
I have a 2000 Hyundai Sonata. And
yeah.
Every time I fill up the gas tank, I have trouble starting it. And it's only the first time after I fill up the gas tank.
How do you like the Sonata? Is it that gold color?
It's green.
Yeah, that's it.
Darker green.
Yeah, the green-gold one.
The green-gold one.
And when you say you have trouble starting it, you turn the key and it goes wow, 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 but it doesn't fire up?
It fires up, it starts up, but then immediately conks out. And then the second try, it'll start up, but I have to keep giving it gas on and off, to keep it running. And it's a stick shift, too, so I don't have enough feet to do everything I need to do down there.
So let me get this straight. You pull into a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how often do you fill up?
At least once a week.
And under what circumstances? Do you do it like immediately upon leaving your house?
No, not always.
Or after you've been driving for a long time?
It varies.
It varies. So sometimes the engine's cold and sometimes the engine's hot. Would you say that is
right.
true?
Right. And it always starts fine every other time, only when I fill it up.
Well, you know, I think it may have more to do with the period of time that it sits before it's restarted than it has to do with putting gas in. For example, when you go to get gas, you've driven it for some period of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes or whatever, and you shut it off and you're there for whatever length of time it takes you to fill the tank, 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to suggest that the only time you do that is when you're getting gas. Otherwise, you drive the car.
Oh, you're getting yourself in trouble. I mean, I can think of a thousand things. She starts the car. She runs in the store. She picks up her mail. She gets back in the car, and it starts right up every time. She's going to tell you that. I'm warning you. That's all.
She's going to tell you that.
There you go.
Because I did a little experiment.
I hate these scientific types.
I put only a couple dollars worth of gas in the car, and I started it up, and with only a little bit in, it started better.
Yeah, because it took less time.
Not the way it usually does.
It took less time to put in a couple of dollars worth than it did to put in $14
wait
worth.
Wait a minute now. On days when you have not put gas in, have you ever stopped someplace for 5 minutes with the engine off and then restarted it after 5 minutes?
Yes.
Of course.
And it starts right up?
Yep, it's only when I fill it all the way full.
So it's only when you filled it all up? Jeez, I was going to say.
You were going to work on the emission system, right?
I was going to work on the cold start system, on there being a fault with the coolant temp sensor such that it is flooding the thing out when it's partially warmed up, or it has to do what's called a hot restart. And a hot restart can be problematic. If you have a faulty coolant temp sensor that's sending the wrong signal to the computer and sending in gasoline in an amount that would be needed for a cold start, it could flood the thing, necessitating your playing with the gas pedal.
Right, in which case it would run lousy or not run at all because it's flooded.
Mm-hmm.
So it could still be that, and I'm sticking with that. I don't the only other possibility is somehow or another, when you fill the tank up, gasoline is getting into the evaporative canister, and somehow that's causing a flood-like condition. But I don't see that happening. Here's what I'm going to suggest. The next time you need gas, pull into the gas station.
don't get any gas.
Don't get any stinking gas.
Just sit there, and when the guy comes over, say, I just came in to talk.
Right. Just came in to see you, big fella.
What do you have?
and stay there for the amount of time that it takes the person next to you to refuel and see if you can start your car.
Okay.
If it starts right up, the next time, take the gas cap off, but yeah. Don't put gas in. You know, if you want to approach this scientifically, these are the steps you have to take. And call us in a couple of years. Let us know your makeout.
All right.
See you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I still think it's the coolant temperature sensor.
Well, it's good.
I just have the feeling.
It doesn't fit the facts, but never let the facts stand in the way of a good answer.
Okay, Tommy, look, it's time for your weekly Puzzler hints.
As always, I am prepared.
Okay, these are fill in the blank. You know, you get this?
Yeah.
In order to improve the air quality in your house, your wife put a blank on your cigar budget.
Yeah, a lit match.
Well, not quite. She put a cap on it.
She put a cap.
That's your first hint, cap. Here's the next one. It's a bowling question. What is the split you get most often?
Well, in my experience, it's she gets the house, I get squat. That's the split that we've usually had.
No, I said bowling.
Bowling.
I was looking for a 7-10 split.
Oh.
The puzzle was about the rare and elusive 7-10 cap.
Oh.
And we'll be back with the answer in just a minute. That east of town, about 1 mile on the number 9 blacktop, getting real wild. The boys would race their muscles out. And even though BP execs point to NPR and say, hey, look what they're spewing, whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was sent in by a fellow named Tom Downs from somewhere in Emailville, I think.
Emailville.
I had to change things around a little bit. It wasn't sufficiently obfuscated.
Yeah, you had to unclarify it.
Yeah. He writes, the other day I was in the local auto parts store and a teenage boy came in. He waited in line at the parts counter, and when his turn came, the fellow behind the counter barked at him, what do you want? The kid says, I want a 7-10 cap. The guy behind the counter says, a 7-10 cap? What's that? The kid says, look, I don't know. It's right there on the engine. And I open the hood, and it's usually right there in front of me, and somehow I've lost mine. The guy behind the counter says, well, what does it do? The kid says, I don't know. Look, I'm a new driver. I got my license a couple of weeks ago. And my father made me promise that every time I drive the car, before I get in, I have to open the hood and look around underneath to make sure everything looks like it did the day before, that the belts are okay, the fluids are full, the hoses look okay, you know, the whole routine.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that this 7-10 cap, which has been there every day, is missing, and I need a new one, and I need it fast. The guy behind the counter asks, well, what kind of car is it? And I figure, it's going to be like a Datsun 710. Remember those?
Yeah, I remember them.
The kid says, it's a Buick. The counter guy asks, well, what does the cap look like? How big is it? Well, the kid makes a circle with his hands, and he shows that it's about 3 inches in diameter. And the fellow says, that doesn't help me. Can you draw me a picture? He hands the kid a piece of paper, and the kid draws this cap, and he writes 710 on it. And the guy behind the counter stifles a laugh and says, I know exactly what you want. And the question is, what did the kid want?
A dope slap.
Well, you could do the same thing yourself. You could draw a circle that was 3 inches in diameter, and you could write 710 in it, and then pretend you're the counter guy by turning the thing 180 degrees, and you want an oil cap.
I thought that was pretty good.
It's cute. Anyway, who's our winner?
The winner is Bill Quinn from El Cajon, California. And for having his answer selected at random.
Let's see what's so funny about Bill Quinn.
I can't believe we selected his answer at random. From all the correct answers that we got, Bill is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can get a copy of our music CD, Car Talk Cartoons, America's Best Disrespectful Car Songs. Wow. Nice going, Bill.
Well, anyway, you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
We will have a brand new, I can't give any hints because I would give it away, but it is a non-automotive.
Oh, that's good
puzzle, and I think it's kind of cute.
Yeah.
And that'll be coming up in the third half of the show today, so stay right by your radio. Don't move. But if you have a question, you can go to your phone. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, this is Mark Silver from San Diego.
Hey, Mark. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks. Question is, my car, when I come out in the morning, or actually when it's been sitting any longer than like 4 or 5 hours, and I start it up, there's like a cloud of kind of black smoke that comes out.
Black?
Yeah, pretty, you know, dark smoke. And then it kind of vibrates a little bit for about maybe 15, 20 seconds, and then it's gone.
Is this like a 1951 Ford pickup truck?
No, this is actually a 93 Volkswagen Jetta. It's got probably about 100,000 miles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
93 Jetta. How long does it have to sit?
4 or 5 hours.
About 4 or 5 hours.
I just guessed because he said it before.
Do you live where it's warm? Is it warm where you live?
San Diego.
Well,
yeah,
San Diego.
Is this green, this Jetta? No, they don't make a green Jetta.
Actually, it is. It's turquoise.
I know it well. Aquamarine.
I get a hard time about that.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, that's a girl's color, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. What were you thinking, man?
I got a good deal.
You got a good deal. What I think is happening is that you have leaking injectors.
Okay.
That when you shut the thing off, the injectors drip. And they're not supposed to. They're only supposed to open up under the pressure of the fuel pump. But if your injectors are tired and old and worn out, they will leak when they're not supposed to. Exactly. And what happens is...
like my brother. It just happens.
I can take it. So what happens is that the injectors drip gasoline... basically into the cylinders. So when you start the thing up, you've got way too much gas in there.
And as you know, when a car runs really rich, what happens? Black smoke.
So it's burning that off.
It'll burn that off. And usually it takes 15 or 20 seconds, and it burns off, and then the thing runs fine. You could choose to do nothing about it.
That won't hurt the car?
Hurt the car.
How many miles do you have on it now?
100,000.
I'd say about 100,000. Are you paying attention here? His name is Mark. He's from San Diego. He's got a 93 Jetta. It's got 100,000 miles on it, and it's green.
I didn't miss a detail. So you've got about 100K on it.
Yeah, I'm going to guess.
I don't think it's going to hurt the car necessarily. If it doesn't,
it's going to get worse, though.
Yeah, if it doesn't get worse, leave it alone.
So what's my option then? Change the fuel injectors?
Yeah, you know, you might need to replace the injectors, which are expensive. But you know what? You can take it to your shop, and they can run the engine, get it hot, and pop the injectors out and see if, in fact, they are leaking.
Okay.
And, if you know, there may be just one of them that's doing it, in which case you can replace just one. Alternatively, you can try a fuel injector cleaner.
Yeah,
which we now sell on our website. See you, Mark.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-228-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Beth from Yellowstone Park.
Are you a ranger?
Oh, heck no. I work at a museum.
Really?
Museum?
Yeah.
There's a museum in Jellystone Park?
Yeah, there's in the basement of the visitor center, there's a curator's office, and that's where I'm holed up.
In the basement? There you are in the midst of the grandeur of Yellowstone Park and you're in a basement office?
That's right. No windows. No
you might as well work in Boston in the financial district.
That's what we often wonder.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
Well, I just paid a lot of money to get my brake shoes and my brake pads replaced last week. Mm. And within like 12 hours, I was braking and this loud knocking or flapping noise started occurring every time I braked. And it, the flapping, it goes the frequency of the tire rotation.
And it stops when you take your foot off the brake.
Yeah, I take my foot off the brake when I'm stopped, so I guess it's hard to say.
Oh, but if you're driving along and you step on the brake and you get this loud sound and you take your foot off the brake while you're still coasting, will it still make the noise?
No, it does not. Only when I'm braking. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
You have a Toyota?
I have a 1990 Geo Prism.
Which is what?
Oh, it's basically Toyota Corolla.
Okay, here's what they did.
I know.
Wrong.
Okay.
I believe. And I know this because I have done the same thing.
Have you?
Myself.
Yeah. Does it have to do with springs?
No.
No.
Summers.
Summers.
They remove the drums in the back, which are very difficult to remove on these cars. And the way you remove them is there are two little holes in the drum that you put two little bolts in. In fact, the bolts, I think, are 8 by 1.25 millimeter threads. And you screw these in, and as you screw these things in, it basically pushes the drum off the rear axle hub. But in doing so, it's very easy to warp the drum. And you can warp the drum so badly that even if you put it on a lathe and machine it, you now machine in the warp.
Oh, you've done this, huh?
100 times. No, and it's a design flaw. The drums are not beefy enough. And so what they did was when they took the drums off, they may have warped them and not even realized it and put the same drums back on without machining them. Or they machined them on their lathe and machined in the warp. So that the remedy now, I'm assuming the noise is coming from the back, although you may tell me different.
Actually, it is.
It is.
Yeah, I took it back on Saturday, 2 days later, and made him, the mechanic, sit in the car while I drove and listen to it.
Ah, said, what did he say?
From the back driver's side, it was coming.
All right, well, you can ask them to try to machine the drum again with the hope that they'll get the warp out. But if they can't, you're going to have to replace the drum.
How expensive are those?
Well, around here, they're cheap, but in Yellowstone Park, they're going to be a lot. I don't know what they cost. I would guess somewhere between $50 and $100.
Oh, okay.
Each. What did you spend for the brake job? Hundreds, right?
Well, it was hundreds, yeah. It was like $300+.
Yeah, well, I would ask them to try to fix it. Here's what you do. You go back to them and say, look, I know this happens a lot because I talked to somebody. Don't mention our name because you'll be in a lot of trouble. And they suggest that it's possible that the left rear drum got warped when you were taking it off. Could you try to machine it and see if you can take the warp out? And if not, can you sell me a drum at your cost?
Well, that's a good idea.
Whatever it costs him, it should cost you. He's not going to make any money on it, just like he's not making any money on all these returned visits. In fact, he's losing money.
That's
this
right.
is a way to get rid of you. In fact, tell him you wanted it 20% below cost.
I've learned it from you.
Good luck, Beth.
Well, thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Hey,
bye.
Remind me later on when we have nothing better to do. I have developed a theory. You know, when Mark from San Diego was talking to us, he mentioned the color aquamarine. I got a theory.
Well, no time like the present, man. Spit your guts.
Let me give it to you.
Yeah, I mean, the callers can
You know, wait. There are some people who... They see the world as extremes. Bad guys, good guys.
Right.
Right? Here's my theory. Is it true that people who see the world, as one might say, in black and white, are they colorblind people?
Oh.
Huh?
Okay, we'll move right along now. 1-888-8-CAR-TALK.
Do you laugh? But there is someone who's writing a doctoral dissertation on this right now. I know it. I mean, if we took all the colorblind people,
well,
we find the predominance.
You're colorblind. Do you see the world in black and white?
Get out! Yes, I do. I do.
You do? I don't
Extremes.
I don't think
people are either good or they're bad. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, you're lying. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255.
That comes up with a brilliant theory.
Hello, you're
and
right.
People laugh him out of the...
It happens all the time. Suck it up, man. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Chris from Philadelphia.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Is that with a K?
No. With a C-H.
Yeah, from Philadelphia.
Yes.
I'm going to pay attention from now on. I got a hard time from my brother recently for not paying attention.
Well, I have a family question, but it's from a long time ago, from the car that we had during my childhood.
Huh.
We had a 1966 Ford Fairlane. And the question is, my father, every time he would shut off the car, he would put it in park and rev it up like five times, like floor it, like put it on the floor.
Ah, yes. Vroom, vroom, vroom. And then turn the key off while it was still revved.
Yes, instantly. And he claimed that this was good for the engine. And that's why he did it. Occasionally we'd get up the nerve to ask, like, why are you doing that? And he would say...
Shut up, you little brat! Yeah.
This is high-tech stuff, and you're too young to understand. When you get older, you'll see.
His answer was always, it cleans the carbon off the tips, and we still don't know what that meant.
Probably means cleans the carbon off the tips of the spark plugs.
Right.
Well, usually a high-speed drive would do that, and that more efficiently than anything else.
Yeah, but revving the engine just before you shut it off. My father used to do this too, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he did.
But he did it for a different reason. He only did it in the summer. I mean, in the winter. Those are the days when cars had a real choke. You pulled a manual choke. And he always had a manual choke because he always drove a truck. And just before he shut it off, he'd vroom, 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 and then he'd pull out the choke, closing the choke until it stalled out. And then he would turn off the key, and he claimed that would make it easier to start the next day.
Assuming that the next start was the next day.
Right.
Because you would have drowned the thing with gasoline and flooded it. And if you tried to start it right after that, you'd never get it started.
But you had to get right out of the truck.
And run like hell. And if you knew you were going to leave it overnight, you accomplished two things. You filled up the float bowl. And at the same time, you set the choke. So you don't have to worry about the choke being stuck and not setting the next morning, which would require opening the hood and all that. Don't forget, he grew up in an era where cars were rather unreliable, where things broke all the time and he needed constant monkeying with. So they were always looking for...
It's not the same anymore?
The cars you own, but it's not the same anymore. And cars were such that you had to... be willing to open the hood and do a lot of things to keep them running. Cars were very finicky.
I mean, you hardly ever see someone whose car doesn't start on a cold winter day anymore. Part of that is because of advances in battery technology. And in those days, you know, you turn the key, and if it didn't start on the first three or four cranks and it was 0 degrees outside, you'd kiss it goodbye. It was going
to... You'd walk to work. Well, with 6-volt batteries, that was a problem. That when the 12-volt battery was invented, more people were on time for work. That was the biggest advance in getting people to work on time than anything else.
Yeah, Bill Gates was behind that.
Yeah, I think so.
He wasn't born yet.
But your father, like our father, saw someone doing this.
Yeah, I think because... Yeah.
And he didn't really know, and that's why he got angry when you asked him why he was doing it, because he couldn't explain it. And I suppose to some extent it helped to get a car started the next morning, but it didn't require 5 revs of the engine.
Yeah.
One would be enough.
The truth of the matter is that he was probably doing
more harm than good.
We don't want to say it.
No.
I mean, come on.
No, who are we to say?
Who are we to say? But he was probably wrecking the engine. I mean, the worst thing you can do to a car is sit there and rev the heck out of it. I mean, even those cars didn't have tachometers, but when he did that, he was probably going up to 5,000 RPM.
Right.
Oh, man, what, sitting there doing 5,000 RPM, you might as well just take a hammer and smash everything under the hood.
Is your father still alive?
Yes.
Don't let him drive your car.
Well, it was good for us, too, because we always knew that it was him coming home. So if we were, like, playing sports in the house or something.
Room, Dad's home.
Put away the hockey sticks.
And pretend you were cutting the grass.
Great.
See you, Chris. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Bye. All right, look, it's time for us to take a little break. You figure?
Says who? I'm on a roll. I don't need no stinking breaks.
I know that, but the FBI agent's eavesdropping on our show today. Sent a guy over, and he's pleading for a break.
All right, all right. We'll be back with the brand new Puzzler in just a minute.
I'm angry at my Ford. It's running kind of bad. Every time I take it in, mechanic only lead. Radiator leaks. Doors don't open right. Thing is rusted out so bad, I only drive at night. But baby says she likes the way it handles on the road, and she wouldn't have no other but this rusted custom Ford. Speedometer don't work. Windshield wiper broke. Baby says she likes the worn and custom tuck and roll, and she wouldn't have no other but this rusted custom Ford.
And even though the FBI starts a least wanted list whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and of course the new Puzzler.
I can hardly wait.
Well, I'm about to do something I don't often do.
Unclarify something?
I'm about to clarify, maybe.
Get out!
Unobfuscate? I don't know. I think it's...
Unobfuscate?
No.
You think it's too... It's already... It came pre-obfuscated?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
This comes from a guy named George Parks, and I don't know where he's from, but...
I know a couple of his brothers.
Yeah?
Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Boston Common.
Boston Common National Park. National Seashore Park, right? here it is.
Yeah.
My son sat patiently in his seat and waited for service. After a while, an attractive-looking young lady came over and asked if he would like something to drink. He replied that he'd like a beer, but being youthful in feature and appearance, she asks him to produce an ID. Mm. This woman checks his ID and with no problem serves him his beer. 4 hours later, he's in the same chair and asks the same server for another beer. To his surprise, the server again asks for his ID. Mm-hmm. Not a surprise. Forgot who he was.
Yeah.
This time, he produces the same ID. The server tells him that, unfortunately, she could not serve him alcohol at this time, and it would be illegal for her to do so. And it has nothing to do with closing times or blood alcohol levels, for example. The question is, what's going on here? Now, if you're thinking
I've got
of
it.
I'm sure you do.
I do.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard, or better still.
Now what? Better still, what?
On a 5-horsepower limited edition Delta left tilt unisaw with carbide tip blade, commercial grade 50-inch Biesemeyer fence, premium miter gauge, and adjustable steel support legs, and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But if you have a question right now and you can't wait, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Rick from Boca Raton.
Boca,
yeah, mouth of the rat, as we call it.
Right. Oh. So what's going on, Rick?
Well, I've got a problem with my son's pickup truck.
Yeah?
He recently joined the Navy and left me with his pickup truck. This is a 1992 Ford F-350 4x4 heavy-duty diesel truck.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And his favorite activity in this truck was he had a huge set of tires on it, and he and his friends used to go mud bogging, which is a sport unique to South Florida here, where you go out in the swamp somewhere.
And try to get stuck.
Well, yeah, you try to get stuck, but you have these huge tires, and you have to throw tons of mud all over everything.
Ah.
They actually have vehicles that are specially built. They're two-level vehicles with huge tires. The engines sit down on the lower level, and then they've got the seat and the steering and everything else on the upper level. So some of these things are like 8 or 9 feet high.
Only in America.
Only in South Florida, believe
me. Only in South Florida, right.
So anyway, he took this out the night before he went in the Navy, and he went mud bogging and came home with about 400 pounds of stinking mud that he and he left it parked in front of my house.
Of course.
Of course. But I took it for a drive, and the first time I took it for a drive, I pulled out, and everything was okay, and I go to make a right-hand turn, and I almost lost the truck on somebody's lawn. It would not turn. The power steering would not work when you turn to the right. It works fine when you turn to the left. Now, I thought it was the tires. So we went home. My other son and I took the big tires off of it and put the regular tires back on it, and it still has this problem. He had a shock absorber, one of those shocks that helps stabilize the front end, installed on it on the right side. I took that off, thinking maybe that's causing the problem. No, it didn't cause a problem. The power steering works perfectly on left-hand turns. It's power, you know, it's one finger turns the wheel.
And as you try to turn it to the right, the belt begins to squeal.
Yeah, it doesn't even squeal. Nothing.
There's no power steering, or does the wheel simply stop turning and you can't even force it?
You can force it around. You can pull it around. It's like driving an old, a real old truck with no power steering at very low speeds. I mean, you have to haul this thing around.
Cool.
But you can turn it all the way to the right if you really have the muscle to do it.
Yes, I can. But you have to have it moving, and you have to really haul on it.
Yeah.
Now, this truck, I have to say, has 376,000 miles showing on the odometer.
And they're hard miles, too.
You bet.
Doing mud. What is mud wrestling? What is it? What is this called? Mud wrestling?
Mud bogging.
Mud bogging. Mud bogging.
Mind boggling and mud bogging, right.
God. Well, here's what happened. The steering box broke.
Okay.
It needs a steering box.
It needs a steering box.
Yeah, assuming that there's really nothing interfering with the... What I would do is I would jack the thing up.
We did. It will turn freely.
Freely.
When I jacked it up.
Yeah, you need a new steering box.
Okay.
And that's good. I mean, that means there's no mud stuck someplace that's preventing it from turning. And if it were, the belt would be squealing rather than the problem that you have.
Oh, okay. And you think it's I've replaced these in other Ford pickups before over the years.
It's a piece of cake.
Just
nuts and bolts.
Yeah, exactly. So it shouldn't be too much. Okay.
Good luck, Rick.
Thanks a lot. I think I'll need it with this one.
See ya. Yeah, you bet.
Okay, guys.
Bye-bye.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Hey, do you know what time it is?
Sure. Time to turn the grease pit into a lap pool?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we check in on a caller from a previous show to see if our advice was reasonable, seasonable.
Or treasonable. So who's our lucky player this week, Johnny?
It's Heidi from Michigan. Remember Heidi?
Of course. Blonde hair, pigtails, yodeled a lot.
No, wrong Heidi. This Heidi called us a couple of months ago because her husband was getting ready to change the timing belt himself on their 98 Volvo Cross Country.
Yes.
The problem that I have with this is that he is not a mechanic. He teaches tennis for a living. And English is like his fifth language. He's not originally from the United States. And he says that he has this book that all mechanics have. And he can just look at the book, and he'll be able to install the new timing belt, and everything will be perfect. But I have to say to him over and over again, but you don't like to read, especially in English. So we're having a kind of a family breakdown here, and I'm wondering if you could give me some advice on whether or not I should have let him change this timing belt in this car.
I think you should lock him in the cellar and take the thing to the Volvo dealer.
That's what my wife does to me.
So that was our advice?
Yeah. After a detailed risk-reward analysis, we said that this is a very tricky job. It's very easy to screw it up. Ask my brother. And that the cost of screwing up is big. I mean, it's a new engine.
Almost.
So it's just not worth it to do this particular job yourself. The risk is too high, we said.
Well, I had a feeling that he wasn't going to take no for an answer, no matter what we told her. You know how guys are once they get an idea in their heads.
Oh, I'd be shocked if he let her take it to the dealer. Shocked.
Well, let's find out. Heidi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, look, before we find out whether you've change timing belts, husbands, or both. We need you to confirm that we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that true?
That's true. We haven't spoken.
And the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or by that Volvo manual in Farsi that we sent your husband.
It has not been influenced.
So did you take our advice, or did you let him have at it, as they say?
Well, I took your advice to heart, but I couldn't convince him otherwise.
I knew it.
You told me to distract him, and there wasn't one distraction that would take his mind away
from
that.
I can think
timing.
Of one.
It was quite the event, but indeed, he did change it. He listened to the call.
Yeah.
And when you guys said that changing the timing belt in the Volvo is like trying to run a marathon without your shoes tied, he said to himself, that's it.
That's
I'm
a job for me.
It.
He said, Sonia Henny's tutu, I can do it.
What a guy.
You actually made him more driven to change the timing belt.
Oh, we did, huh?
Well, and his next question to me was, Heidi, what's a seller? So, but he did go ahead and do it, and he did make one mistake. He got the timing belt all installed, got the tension where he thought it was supposed to be, and then he started the engine to see how it worked, but he did not open the garage door. And it was really late at night, like 2 in the morning, and he was in there fiddling around with it with the car running with the garage door closed. And I think he was starting to hallucinate. So my advice to would-be aspiring, pretend-they-know-everything husbands like mine is just make sure you open the garage door when you start your car.
Now, did he change the water pump, too? Because I think that was part
of
our advice.
No, in fact, he didn't.
So was our advice, would you say, good or bad?
I think your advice was very good, and I think that you should continue to give that.
Well, we're encouraged to hear that.
Your advice was very good and very true. It was just that I have a very stubborn husband, and I think that...
Well, we said he wasn't going to listen to us.
Actually, yeah, you're right. You said that.
Yeah.
And you gave me lots of ways to distract him, but once I was done distracting him, his mind was on the timing belt.
That's the kind of guy I like. Boy, oh boy, don't listen to anybody. Especially your wife.
Right. Okay.
There you go. More sage advice, more sage marital advice from Tom Magliozzi. And call us, Heidi, when the water pump seizes, and we'll tell you what to do by the side
of
the road.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for playing Stump the Chumps.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or call now and stump us. It's real easy. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Nancy. I'm calling from Heartland, Vermont.
Hi, Nancy. That sounds like it's right in the middle of the state, huh?
Well, it's just south of White River Junction, right on the Connecticut River.
I know it well.
You do?
I went to Dartmouth.
Once. Yeah, we're right down the road.
What's up?
I need some advice on buying a used vehicle.
Yeah.
In August, my whole family were leaving Vermont, and we are driving to Central America because we're going to live in Belize for a year.
What are you, like the Von Trapp family in reverse?
Well, sort of, considering the way we sing.
You live in Belize for a year.
And we're going to drive there.
You're
going
to drive there?
Yeah.
Why just a year?
I've been offered a job as a teacher at a tiny little school at a rainforest research station.
They call it teaching now, huh? Picking corn. They tell you it's a teaching job.
And slopping the hogs.
As soon as you get there, you'll find out that the teaching job has disappeared. The cow won't run anymore. And you're going to be picking corn.
Oh, gosh.
So you want to know what kind of Land Rover should you buy?
So how many of you are there, first of all?
Well, there's myself and my husband, and we have two daughters and a dog, and all the stuff we need to live for a year.
Oh, you need a C5A.
Who makes that, Toyota?
I think Boeing.
Wait, how old are your daughters?
They're 14 and 11.
Are they thrilled at the possibility of living in Belize?
Anything's better than freezing your butt off at White River Junction, Vermont. Are you kidding me? They're going to run away and join the Belize Circus. You're never going to see them again.
It's possible. Yeah, they're pretty excited.
Yeah, well, God, I would be too. Are you kidding?
Well, good for you.
So the other thing is that we need, you know, the advice we've been given is to kind of look around and see what kind of vehicles are down there. And we went there in January, and we saw a lot of Toyotas. So we're kind of thinking, now this is where we need the advice. I'm sort of leaning toward like an older model Toyota 4Runner.
There you go.
or a Pathfinder. And my husband is kind of thinking about a Blazer.
No, I would stick with Japanese.
Uh-huh.
Even though you may think, and I'm sure your husband is thinking, that it will be easier to get parts for the Blazer, he's wrong.
Really?
And I think it'll be easier to get parts for either one of those Japanese things because there are more of them there. And number two, you're going to need fewer parts because they don't break as often.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I recommend you do. I recommend you fly to L.A. Okay? Buy a 4Runner in L.A. It will get stolen. It will wind up in Belize.
Go there and buy it.
Go there, you can buy your own. Put some identifying mark, like in the glove box. Put your initials.
We should steal a car in L.A.?
No, no. They're going to steal it for you. The car thieves steal cars, and they wind up in Belize.
Why?
I don't know, but Belize, I think, is like the capital of where all the stolen cars wind up.
Really?
I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to recommend either the 4Runner or the Pathfinder. You have to be careful, however, driving on what I will call unimproved roads.
Which are most from when we hit the Mexico border all the way down.
Yeah, so you have to be very careful about tipping the thing over. And don't be too much in a hurry to get there.
Okay.
Drive nice and slow. You're going to be driving through Mexico, huh?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you got badges?
Will you be anywhere where you can send us some Cuban cigars?
It's quite possible. I actually have some Cuban cigars.
Well, then take care of yourself.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, this is going to be quite an adventure.
Yes, it will. You know, believe it or not, while we're there, we're actually possibly going to be going to Cuba.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Well, don't forget your old pals Tom and Ray if you do go.
Cigars are on the way.
Box 3500, Cambridge, Our Fair City.
Nancy, this is going to be great. It's something your kids will remember for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, we think so.
And they'll never forgive you
they'll
for
never
it.
Never forgive you. Right?
Good luck, Nancy.
All right, thank you very much.
See you.
All right, bye.
Thanks for calling.
See you, Nancy.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Doug Berman, our producer, went to Japan for a week, and he had dysentery for a year. You never forgot that trip. Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David, the Mirror Masher Green. Our senior web blackie is Doug, the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our production assistant is Aaron Wax. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Fort Drum, Buttered Rum, Bread Crumb, Peach Plum, Papadum, Cardamom, Bubblegum, and Extra Strength Tum, Yummity Yum, Dim Sum, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our sunscreen provisioner is Les Brown. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the lording linguists in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
Yes, we'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1022, wander through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a new blog post about reincarnation.
Ah, must be Jim Montevalli. I always thought that guy was a little, you know...
No. It's about recycling cars.
Oh, like when your Fiat gets crushed and shipped to South Korea and comes back as the tray for a Swanson Hungry Man TV dinner?
Yes, that's it.
Well, if you want the real story about how much of your old car really gets reused and recycled and how the process works, read the latest informative blog post from Jim Montevalli.
Find it at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Goldilocks wonders who's been messing with her radio's presets whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.